From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Peter Sagal. Every year, the big news magazines hand out their Person of the Year awards. We say, why be a skinflint? Why just one person? Why not share the love? So today, Wait, Wait hands out our Person of the Year awards like candy, namely by revisiting some of our favorite celebrity guests of recent months. We start with Craig Ferguson, the Scottish comedian who came from seemingly nowhere to become a fixture on late-night TV. When he joined panelists Charlie Pierce, Sue Ellicott, and Tom Baudet, we asked him about his monologues, which are more like lengthy stream-of-consciousness musings than the traditional collection of jokes.
What happens is that when I started doing the show, they asked me to do a traditional late-night monologue. You know, hey, you guys, how about those playoffs? What about those Yankees? And when I was talking about the Yankees, I had no idea what I was talking about. I thought it was the Revolutionary War. I was just, you know, reading out jokes. So I said, look, I'll do whatever's on my mind. I'll talk about what I want to talk about, and we'll see how that goes. And it seems to have picked up. That's really the way it went. I couldn't read any more jokes. I was so bad at it.
Right, you're not coming out and doing a series of bing-bang topical jokes. You're making these rambling monologues about, like you say, any topic at hand.
Yes, that's right.
But they're also...
I think actually it's what television's better for that, because I think it makes it more intimate. And at that time of night, most people are drunk.
That's
so,
true.
or intimate.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Most people are being intimate. They're not paying any attention to what I'm saying.
So have you had to learn how to... Because you grew up in Scotland, of course. We don't have the tradition of...
We don't have late-night television. It's all turned off at 8 o'clock at night, and everyone gets beaten. Hey, television turned off. Let's beat everyone up.
I got to tell you, there are some nights I've watched Leno, and that seems like a better alternative. But
Oh, no.
Oh, I'm sorry. He's on another network. I can say that.
That's right, yeah.
But did you have to, like, learn the ways and mores? I mean, like, how to sit and chat with some starlet about her next movie that may not have come naturally to you?
Yeah, a little bit. Although I have instituted a policy of no one gets on the show unless I'm remotely interested in talking to them, which is... It's a new idea, apparently, but, you know, they say, oh, well, you know, some, and I won't name anyone, but, you know, Tara Reid, for example, wants to come on about... I'll say, well, I'd rather she didn't. Can she do it in someone else's, you know, show? She was on the show once, but, you know, we both thought it was a terrible idea about halfway through the interview, and I threw it to a commercial, and I think everyone was happier.
Really? You did that? You sort of said, oh, we're going to take a break, and then, well, the camera was off, you turned to Tara Reid and said, I'm sorry, but I'm just not that into you. Is that what you did?
No, I didn't. I did it the Hollywood way. I said, we have to take a break. Then it went to commercial, and I said, you're terrific! and then I never asked her back, basically.
You had a career, Craig, as a stand-up, of course, before you, or maybe even as you came to America, and we looked into it. So tell me, Craig, about this Bing Hitler.
Oh, Bing Hitler was a character that I played early on in my career. Everyone was doing character comedy in Britain in the 80s, and I thought, I want a character who has a name that will stand out in a poster.
Yeah.
You know. Well, I chose the name Bing Crosby for comfort, and then the name Hitler, I thought, well, that'll get people's attention. And it did, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, did it in a good way, or did you get yourself in trouble?
Yeah, no, it was fine. Actually, the character was very successful. It was nothing to do with, you know, singing or fascism, but it was...
Which is a shame, because when you eliminate singing and fascism, what's left to do comedy about,
right,
really?
Because these are the building blocks of comedy. Without them, what can you do?
Exactly. You're stuck doing prop humor without fascism, really.
That's right. Without singing and fascism, everyone's carrot top. And then you're gonna go.
Well, Craig Ferguson, we are utterly delighted to have you with us today. Now, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
You are the last organ grinder in New Jersey.
Excellent.
We saw a fine article in the LA Times last week about Joe Bush, who is... Well, he's the last organ grinder in New Jersey.
Right.
I'm going to ask you three questions about the life and times of a man who truly has a monkey on his back.
Right.
If you get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Craig Ferguson playing for?
Peter, he is playing for Mike Fangman of Burbank, Illinois.
All right. Here's your first question. Joe Bush did a lot of things in his youth. He was in a rock and roll band. He tried stilt walking. Why did he decide to become an organ grinder? Was it A, his friends said his big curly mustache made him look like an organ grinder, so why not? B, he was walking down the street when he saw a crank organ sitting in the trash, took advantage of it. Or C, as he put it, quote, I don't know, I'm just somehow drawn to tiny monkeys in hats.
I think B, he took advantage of a trashy organ he saw lying in the street.
Decided to make it into his living. I asked for that one, and it still took me by surprise. Isn't that...
I aim to please. I'm nothing if not a vaudevillian.
Okay. No, the answer, of course, was A, the big curly mustache. The corners
really?
Of his... Yeah, the corners of his... He's in the 1970s. He had a big curly mustache, and the ends of it started to meet down at his chin, and his friends said, hey, you know what you look like? You look like one of those hurdy-gurdy guys. And he said, well, why fight it? And that's what he became.
Well, why not shave it?
You know what's funny is the reporter in the article suggested that to him, and he slapped his head and said, oh, no, now you tell me. All right, you two have two more chances here.
All right.
Next question. So, of course, he had made this decision to become a hurdy-gurdy guy. He had to go out and get himself a monkey. He did. The monkey's name was George. How did Joe begin the process of training George to be his partner? A, he fed George all the caramel popcorn he wanted until he became dazed and tractable. B, he tied himself to George all night, three nights a week until they got used to each other. Or C, he got an organ grinder monkey outfit for himself so that George would see him and want to imitate him.
This is a trick question, isn't it?
It is.
I want to say he got the outfit so the monkey would imitate him, but I think the monkey's smarter than that. So I suspect it was A, the other one that I forgot.
You fed George all the caramel popcorn?
Yeah, that one. Why not?
Well, sadly, it was B. He tied himself to the monkey all night, three nights a week.
Is that legal? I don't know if I like that.
This was in suburban New Jersey, where, believe me, anything goes.
How closely did he tie himself to the monkey?
Unclear. Well, they'd fight. He said he'd tie himself to the monkey. He'd turn in the TV so that it would cover the noise of them fighting, and then he and the monkey would go at it, hammer and tongs, all night, shrieking, yelling, whatever, until finally the monkey gave up and started cooperating with him.
But when you say tied himself to the monkey, do you mean there's a little kind of wristband around his wrist?
That would be my guess.
He wasn't, like, strapped flat to his body.
I don't think so. I don't think he wrapped duct tape around himself with the monkey.
That's a baby Bjorn thing.
Because if he had done that, I guarantee you the monkey would have won.
Exactly.
You gotta keep distance. Interesting to know what people are doing while you're working on late night television.
Exactly. Yes, the only purpose of your show, sir, is to drown out the monkey cry. All right, we're gonna leave Joe and George alone. They ended up having a wonderful career together until George died. He's now freeze dried and sitting on Joe's mantelpiece. Well, where else do you want him to be?
Is he still attached to the freeze-dried monkey?
No, I believe he cut the cord and moved on with his life.
All right.
Still performing with another monkey, but we have a historical question for you. One of the reasons that Joe is one of the last, or the last, organ grinder in the New York City area is because organ grinders in New York were dealt a terrible blow when Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia banned them entirely in the 1930s. Why did he do that? A, Mr. and Mrs. Astor insisted on it after a monkey climbed in their Fifth Avenue window during, quote, a marital moment.
Wow.
Was it because the mayor hated organ grinders because when he was a kid, he used to get teased by kids shouting, hey, organ grinder, where's your monkey? Or C, reporters who had gathered for a mayoral appearance were distracted and eventually walked away to watch a performing monkey. And the mayor was mad.
I'm thinking A, it was the Astors in the three-way with the monkey.
I really have no one to blame for this but myself. So.
I mean, come on, you stop it.
I know.
I think maybe the answer, but I think probably it's B, the other one that I've completely forgotten.
The mayor hated organ grinders because they used to tease him by calling him one.
Yeah, why not?
That's right, in fact.
Wow!
It had to do, of course, with anti-Italian prejudice at the turn of the century and the fact that Fiorello LaGuardia was pretty funny looking.
Yeah, well, you're going to be like that if you strap a freeze-dried monkey to your machine.
I can still hear their cries, LaGuardia wrote in his memoirs 50 years later. Hey, Fiorello, where's your monkey? Carl, how did Craig Ferguson do in our quiz?
Peter, he needed at least two correct answers to win for Mike Fangman, but Craig had just one correct answer.
Oh, I'm terribly sorry.
It's all right. You know, you've got so much else going for you. This is a minor bump in the road.
No, I feel I've let America down. I'm going home.
All right. Greg Ferguson is the host of CBS's The Late Late Show. You can watch it pretty much every weeknight at 12:35 a.m. Eastern. He's also the author of the new novel, Between the Bridge and the River. Craig Ferguson, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Lovely to have time with you.
From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Peter Sagal. This week, we are revisiting some of the visits we have with celebrities over the past year. It's sort of the Wait, Wait version of Lollapalooza, except it's much shorter and you don't need to sleep in a tent. One of the things we enjoy most about our Not My Job game is that it allows us to explore the funny side of people who are not widely known for being funny. But sometimes, it's also fun just to bring on one of the nation's foremost humorists, pull out his ripcord, and let him go. For example, Dave Barry. When he joined us, along with Roy Blunt Jr., Sue Ellicott, and Mo Rocca, we started off by asking, or rather complaining, about the fact that he had given up writing his weekly humor column.
It was really easy to stop. It was much harder to do it, I've learned.
You mean it was much harder to actually write the column than to not write the column?
Yeah, writing, I'm not going to get too technical here, but not writing a column is easier than writing a column.
I see. And let me ask you, every week, does not writing a column get a little easier with practice?
Well, you have to, be thinking ahead. You have to think, well, I've got to not write one next week, and then as soon as you're done not writing that one, you've got to start thinking about not writing the next one. So it's not like I'm doing nothing.
Is there an approval process? I mean, does somebody have to give you the go-ahead not to?
Yeah, well, we have editors and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I understand. No, honestly, I think it's a compliment to you, but people were very upset with you when you decided not to discontinue the column.
Yeah, well, in all honesty, the hell with them.
Yeah. Who do they think they are?
No, it really is nice that people wanted me to keep writing my column, but the truth is, I was the one who had to write it, so it just,
And have you enjoyed the presumably the freedom that you now have, not having to write a column every week?
Well, now it's not really, because I'm writing books now, so it ends up being writing anyway.
Yeah. Now, not only, of course, are you a former columnist and an author of books these days, but you're also a musician.
No, I'm not. I'm in a band, though, with Roy.
Well, yeah, you and Roy are in a band called the Rock Bottom Remainders. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. We play, and Roy actually coined the phrase that describes our genre, hard listening music.
That's great.
I play, I call it the rumor method of music, in that everybody's holding an instrument of some kind and playing something, and then a rumor goes around that there's been a chord change. But you know, rumors don't always reach everybody at the same time. So.
We're the only band that encourages people to leave their phones on.
Now, this is a concept band, much like Kiss, or in the sense that you have a gimmick.
Yeah, Roy wears all that makeup as well.
Yeah.
Roy, do you want to tell them about your cot piece, or not now, not tonight? Our concept is that we're. The idea was that, wouldn't it be cool if a bunch of people who wrote books for a living got together and made music? And the only problem turned out we couldn't, but we did it anyway, But Roy is our MC, and I would say that's pretty much the highlight of the show.
So Roy doesn't actually play? He's just part of the band?
I don't play at all.
He introduces the band, and then it kind of goes downhill.
Yeah. So he's like,
But there is one song, Roy kind of alluded to.
You move me.
Yeah, right. We give Roy a solo in Wild Thing.
Yeah.
Where Scott Turow Scott Turow, who's the only person in the band almost as untalented as Roy musically, sings lead. And then the one, you know, the point where he, you know, goes, "You moved me." The person is supposed to go, "You moved me." That's Roy. And the only problem is you're supposed to do it at a certain moment in the song. And Roy never gets what moment it is. And so we take bets sometimes on whether Roy will be early tonight or late. And sometimes there's a fair amount of money involved.
Do you want to practice right now? Do you want to hum the lead in and see if Roy can do it?
Okay.
All right, here we go.
Ready, Roy?
Yeah, all right, here we go.
Come on in. Hold me close.
You move me.
Yeah, not bad. That was not bad. That was good.
He waited.
That was late, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. It's actually a little early.
Can I get this on iTunes?
See, we can fix this on radio. We'll just slide a couple of seconds. But it was Dave, actually, who came up with the motto of the band, which is, we play music like Metallica writes novels.
Well, I want to stress that we only play to raise money for good causes. We're not always familiar with what cause it is, mm-hmm. but we know it's good.
Yeah. Well, Dave Barry, it is a delight to have you with us. We have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Hi, I'm Will E. Coli, the mascot of the Food and Drug Administration.
In 1997, President Clinton issued a memo urging the U.S. government to, quote, embrace the Internet as a tool for teaching and learning. The Washington Monthly magazine recently conducted a survey of the various government department websites aimed at educating our children. We're going to ask you three questions about these initiatives. Get two questions right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine.
Now, are there actual real right answers to these questions?
Astoundingly enough, yes.
Okay.
All right. Carl, who is Dave Barry playing for?
He is playing for Megan Kramer of Toledo, Ohio.
All right, you ready to go?
That's a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm. No, it's just Megan. She's cool.
Okay.
Okay, Dave, here's your first question. Which of these is the actual mascot for the National Agricultural Statistics Service? Is it A, Stanley Stat, an animated pie chart? B, Manny Median, who always is taller than half his friends and shorter than the other half? Or C, Silas K. Silo, an animated grain storage tower?
Man, they're all pretty stupid.
Yeah. This is our government.
I'm going to go with Stanley Stat.
Stanley Stat, the animated pie chart.
Yeah.
You're right. Stanley Stat has a love interest. Pie chart Pam.
Who's pregnant.
Yes.
That's never mind.
Never mind. All right. You've got one right. Two more to go. There's one government agency that we didn't expect to do outreach to kids, but it does. What is it? Is it A, the U.S. Marshal Service, with its characters Harry the Hunting Hawk, who's always picking up Wiley Frank the Fugitive Ferret? B, the National Security Agency, which tries to recruit future surveillance experts with their characters Crypto Cat, Decipher Dog, and the other Crypto Kids? Or is it C, the National Bureau of Weights and Measures, with its happy-go-lucky yet ignored mascot, Cool Kitty Kilogram?
Man, those are also stupid. I'm going to go with the... I'm just figuring on the assumption that we don't seem to know what's going on really anywhere in the world, so the national... The middle one there.
The National Security Agency.
Yeah.
Trying to reach out to kids with Crypto Cat and
Decipher Dog. Because I think they're
maybe
just busy reaching out to kids, you know.
Exactly.
What I mean?
One way or another. You're right. It is, in fact, the NSA. The Crypto Kids offer code breaking and making games on their website and a link called How I Can Work for the NSA. So if your adorable 10-year-old asks you to speak closer to the lamp. Check their internet usage. You're doing really well. I guess your retirement has allowed you time to ruminate on things. Let's see if you can go perfect. On its kids page, the Federal Reserve Board illustrates the concept of inflation for children. How? A, an American Eagle handing a dollar to a hot dog vendor, but the dollar is shrinking B, a sad daddy showing his kids a nickel when the candy sign says 25 cents. Or C, it's just a chart comparing money supply to the wholesale price index, but it's bright purple.
Well, I'm going on assumption here. The Federal Reserve Board is not the most imaginative group, so I'm gonna say it's the middle one, the dad with the nickel.
The dad with the nickel, and the candy sign says 25 cents, and the children become bitter and resentful,
and they hate him.
Go out and get piercings.
Yeah.
The answer, I'm afraid, was A, the American Eagle and the
man.
Hot dog vendor.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, sadly.
Oh, man.
By the way, I know you're wondering about this. The difference between the Federal Reserve Board Eagle and your standard cartoon American Eagle is that the Federal Reserve version is wearing a top hat.
Mm.
In the manner of the classic capitalist.
Like the guy in Monopoly.
Exactly, like Mr. Moneybags, Monopoly. Because everybody knows that capitalists wear top hats.
Yeah.
Carl, how did Dave Barry do on our quiz?
Dave did well enough, Peter. He had two correct answers, so he wins for Megan Kramer. Congratulations, Dave.
Wow.
Well done, sir.
Thank you. I never win anything.
Really?
Yeah, I still really feel like sort of haven't. Yeah.
Well.
I mean, Carl's not doing squat for me. You know
that's
what I mean?
True.
He would if you were still writing your column.
Yeah, exactly.
People tend to believe that notable personalities were born the way you see them today. Take, for example, Gwen Ifill, the TV journalist, host of PBS's Washington Week in Review. You might have assumed she was always intent on bringing seriousness and gravitas to public affairs. Not so. Back in the day, she wanted to be a librarian, which she discussed with us when she joined us along with panelists Mo Rocca, Luke Burbank, and Paula Poundstone.
Well, you know, I think I was speaking to librarians at the time.
Uh-huh.
My dream job is actually to be a backup singer.
Oh, really?
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, yeah.
You wanted to be a Supreme or a Pip?
I want to be something that's not actually in front of the microphone with the spotlight. I want to be the person singing in the background.
Oh, about the Dewey Decimal System. I love that.
No, this is it. That sounds much more exciting than the Dewey Decimal System.
I think I try to pay a fair amount of attention to what's going on, and I try to watch the debates and things like that. But let me just say, I may not be average, but if you wanted to do a little number before it got started.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That'd be great.
I think this is your time, Gwen. Because
yeah,
it is called Not Your Job, and it could be the job you want. So, if you would like to serenade us at this point.
You tell me a song, I'll sing it.
All right. What song do you want Gwen Ifill to sing, guys?
The Man I Love.
Baby Got Back.
Someday he'll come along. The man I love. I don't believe I'm doing this.
Yes, you are. Go.
Big and strong, the man I love. And though he's coming, when he comes my way, I'll do my best to make him stay. Ha ha.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen.
Man, that's awesome. Gwen Ifill, Gershwin on demand. That's
wow.
Great.
I see a future as a Marvelette for you.
I've got a little Janet Jackson in me, but that's for next time. Mm.
Gwen Ifill, we're delighted to have you with us. We've invited you here to play a game we're calling...
You're the Man of Steel, but this time around, you've got a cute dog for a sidekick.
We're talking, of course, about Superman, the only figure to become a cultural icon while wearing his underpants on the outside. Our one-time intern, Ted Anderson, dug up three things from Superman's past that the Man of Steel probably would like us to forget. Get two of these questions right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners. Carl, who is Gwen Ifill playing for?
Gwen is playing for Carolyn Smith of Liverpool, New York.
All right. First question. We all know that Superman is faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, blah, blah, blah. Back in the 50s and 60s, though, in the comic book, he seemed to acquire even more powers just as he needed them. Including which of these? A, super whistling, or the ability to charm people by whistling. B, super weaving, or the ability to, well, weave things really quickly. Or C, super hairstyling, or the ability to give you a trim with just his bare hands.
Well, now we're thinking 50s, so we're thinking Andy Griffith, we're thinking whistling.
You're thinking whistling. You think that Superman would whistle and people would do his bidding? Ooh,
I think that hairstyling wasn't really big for male superheroes.
Uh-huh.
And this is, what was the second one?
The second one was super weaving.
And weaving, that is, it involves hair or involves a loom. And looms really take up too much space.
That's
she
true.
Is really using logic.
So your choice is A, super whistling.
Super whistling.
No, it was super weaving. It was. The power was used in a particular 1950s comic book in which Superman, for reasons we weren't able to figure out, had to make a wedding dress real quick.
That's hilarious.
All right. You still have two more chances here, Gwen, so here we go. Superman has fought Lex Luthor and Brainiac and scores of other villains, but on one memorable occasion, he fought a figure from real life. Who? Was it A, Ugandan dictator Idi Amin, B, former heavyweight champion Muhammad Ali, or C, subway vigilante Bernard Guts?
I'm going for Muhammad Ali.
You're saying he...
And I'm going for it because I think it was a patriotic fight in which probably neither one of them won.
So you're thinking that she fought Muhammad Ali. You're right. Very good.
Yay!
1978 saw the publication of Superman versus Muhammad Ali, in which the two icons, fictional and real, fought each other under the light of a red sun, you see, in order to take away Superman's advantage. By the way, Ali won. So there you are.
Yeah.
All right, now this is exciting.
I'm at the edge of my seat.
You've got one. You've got one correct. One more to go. Get this right, you will win it all. Last question. Superman has had some help over the years in his fights for truth, justice, and the American way. We're talking, of course, about the League of Super Pets. Which of these critters of steel had the honor of wearing the big red S? Was it A, Beppo the Super Ape, B, Coral the Super Dolphin, or C, Squeaky the Super Mouse?
Well, once again, we have to think about the time when the comic books were popular. And that,
see how she does it?
Watch my logic work.
Think it through. I can't get over that.
It's really important to me.
The candidates don't stand a chance with that kind of logic.
Really?
And you know what? And this kind of absurd reasoning really helps me with candidates. And here's the thing. I'm thinking it's the ape because there was the whole Today Show ape thing. At that
right.
time, we
yeah.
humanized apes.
You're saying Beppo the Super Ape.
That's what I'm saying.
You're right. Very well done. The other members of this august pantheon of domestic companions was Crypto the Super Dog, Streaky the Super Cat, and Comet the Super Horse. So remember, if your planet is exploding and you have to send your infant son off in a rocket to some far distant solar system, make sure to send along the family pets. Carl, how did Gwen Ifill do in our quiz?
Well, she needed at least two correct answers to win. Gwen, you had two correct answers, so you win for Carolyn Smith.
Yay. Congratulations.
Highlight of my week.
I'd like to think, Gwen, that in addition to winning our quiz, your being able to sing in the air might inspire you to finally quit this silly news business and go pursue your real dream.
I'm afraid that they're going to ask me to quit.
Yes. Gwen Ifill is the host of PBS's Washington Week in Review. She's a regular contributor to the NewsHour with Jim Lehrer. Gwen Ifill, what a pleasure to have you on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Thank you so much.
Up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman. Yes, it's Superman, strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Superman, who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands, and who, disguised as Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper, fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way.
From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Peter Sagal. In mid-2006, panelists Amy Dickinson, Roy Blunt Jr., and Mo Rocca came with us to Kansas City, where we put on our show at an old burlesque house. For our Not My Job game, we chose one of Kansas City's most famous sons, writer Calvin Trillin. Now, Trillin is known, among other things, for being a dedicated New Yorker. So the question came up, how do you raise children with those down-home Kansas City values while you're in the middle of Greenwich Village?
Well, it's very easy. You just take a white picket fence and you put it around the brownstone.
Right.
It marks it. You say, this is Kansas City.
And within those confines, what rules apply?
Well, Midwestern rules, and the sort, of course, the the motto of the entire Midwest, which could be on the license plates of all the states, is no big deal.
Don't get a big head about it.
Right.
Don't get too big for your britches.
Right.
You know, I was just, we're in the Folly Theater here, a form of burlesque house, as I understand it. I wonder if
the answer is no, Roy. I was never in that.
All right. All right.
At least he never bought a ticket. He's willing to go that far. You, of course, are the nation's only deadline poet. You regularly write poetry about the news. In fact, I understand you have a new book out, a collection, your second collection of Bush administration-inspired rhymes.
It's called A Heck of a Job.
Right. Before we go any further, do you, for those who don't know this side of you, do you have a sample for us?
Well, sure. I could read the title poem, which is called Further Words from George W. Bush After He Said to FEMA Chief Michael Brown, Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. A qualified guy, I wish I had added. Your resume's super, even if padded. We wanted the best to lead FEMA's forces, and who would know more than a man who knows horses? You saw that the storm was more than some showers and sent off a memo in 4 or 5 hours. You found out that life in the dome was not super, and only a day after Anderson Cooper. A heck of a job, you know how to lead him. We hope to award you the Medal of Freedom.
Okay, so... I have to ask you, they named a new poet laureate this week, and somehow...
Rejected again.
They passed you over.
I don't understand. This is something like the 14th time in a row I've been rejected.
Is this just the elitism of the Academy? They don't want their poet laureate to be someone who does accessible stuff?
Exactly. I'm glad you said it.
Yeah.
I feel like that actress who always just failed to get the daytime Soap
Award. You're the
Susan Lucci.
No. Yeah, no, you're not, though, because she finally won.
Right.
Oh, well.
I'm not, right.
That'll never happen.
We need an even more iconic loser for you now.
That's right.
Well, Kevin Trillin, we're pleased to welcome you back to your hometown. We have asked you here, telephonically, to play a game we're calling...
You are the conscience of the Senate and a high-pressure hose of cash back to West Virginia.
In other words, you're Democratic Senator Robert Byrd, who this week set a record and became, with 47 years in office, the longest-serving senator in United States history. Now, we thought we would pay tribute to this great statesman by asking you 3 questions about him. Get 2 right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's Voice, and their home answering machine. So, Corey, who is author Calvin Trillin playing for?
Lisa Carew Burden of Kansas City.
All right. Here's your first question. Now, it is well known that Robert Byrd was a member of the Ku Klux Klan as a young man. He's a little slip-up he has repeatedly apologized for ever since. But what's less well known is how much his experience in the Klan changed the course of his life. Was it A, that he met and courted his future wife Irma for 2 weeks without ever seeing her with her hood off? Was it B, by winning election to the office of exalted Cyclops, he realized that he could be an effective politician?
C.
Or was it C, a bad asthma attack brought on by a cross-burning made him into a lifelong anti-smoking advocate?
I withdraw my I'll say B.
You're going to say B, that by winning election to the office of exalted Cyclops of the Ku Klux Klan, he realized that he could be an effective politician.
Yeah.
You're right. That's exactly what happened. Byrd was just a shipyard worker when he realized via his electoral success in the Klan that he could convince people to support him. As one of his fellow Klansmen said to him, quote, "You have a talent for leadership, Bob." Okay. You got 1 right. That was very good. You sort of you came away.
I never had any doubts about that.
No, not at all. Now, Mr. Byrd, in his many decades in the Senate, become known for his mastery of Senate history and rules, and of course for steering more than $1 billion of taxpayer money back to West Virginia. But he has another remarkable feather in his cap. Is it A, he's issued a CD of himself playing the country fiddle, B, they still call the best player on any West Virginia high school football team the Birdman, or C, he holds the world record for largest freshwater perch caught with hand tackle?
A.
A, that he issued a CD of himself playing the fiddle?
Yeah.
You're right, he did. Last question. You could go for perfect. Senator Byrd is an accomplished and skilled legislator. In fact, via his mastery of lawmaking, he is personally responsible for which of these things happening? A, each and every federal law enforcement officer in this country now addresses any woman over the age of 15 as ma'am rather than miss. B, cosmetology students in Philadelphia had to spend a day watching lectures by two Supreme Court justices. Or C, Byerly's Cafe in Wheeling, West Virginia will always be exempt from any anti-smoking ordinance.
I like to think it's A. I'm not sure it is, but I'm going to vote for that one anyway.
You're going to vote for the fact that Robert Byrd, through force of law, now requires that any federal law enforcement officer must address any woman over the age of 15 with the appellation ma'am.
Wow.
Even snotty teenagers.
I mean, Britney Spears is over 15.
I know. So that's your choice. Your choice is A.
No.
The answer actually was B, the cosmetology students watching the Supreme Court justice lectures. And not just them. Because of an amendment Byrd slipped into a bill last year, every single school, no matter what they teach, if they receive federal funding, they must instruct their students on the Constitution on September 17th of each year. That's the document's birthday. Another example found by the New York Times, Irene's Myomassology Institute of Massage in Michigan, which quizzed its budding masseurs and masseuses on the Bill of Rights.
I got that one wrong on purpose because I was brought up to be humble.
There you are. Corey, how did Calvin Trillin do on our quiz?
Calvin Trillin got two right, meaning Lisa Carew Burden gets Carl Castle's voice on her home answering machine.
Very well done.
The most successful and widely known African-American performer on TV today is somebody you have never actually seen. Well, you have seen his right arm, but it's encased in a bright red puppet called Elmo. Puppeteer Kevin Clash is the guy behind those TV shows and movies and, of course, the incredibly popular toys. When he joined us, along with panelists Charlie Pierce, Sue Ellicott, and Tom Baudet, we asked him if he ever had an inkling how popular the Elmo toys would be.
No, I had no idea. I mean, I normally, because I'm so busy, they have me go into a recording studio and really put down as many toys as I can do. You know, and they'll go through and say, this toy does that, this toy does that. And, of course, this little red monster, it laughs. And you squeeze it three times, and the third time it vibrates. And I said, oh, really?
Well, Kevin, sounds like fun.
Interestingly enough, Peter, now at the 10-year anniversary, some of the people involved in the first Tickle Me Elmo craze are just coming up for parole.
Well, Kevin, this is Tom. I was thrilled to hear you were going to be on the show this week. And before I knew that, my youngest boy had his first birthday last week, and relatives who we have no control over send us gifts. And I came down the other morning to find a Chicken Dance Elmo doll on my kitchen counter. And the first time that went off, it was pretty cute, and the second time maybe just slightly less so. And and you know, about the 50th time, you know, I thought
you were probably trying to find me.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to, you know, do you have any regrets?
Well, no, because I know now that, you know, Fisher-Price puts an off button on these things.
Where is it?
Yeah, please.
Hey, before we get to the game, could we talk to Elmo for a minute?
Hello.
Hello, Elmo. How are you?
Elmo's fine.
We heard an amazing thing about you, Elmo, that you...
Really?
Yes, we did. We heard this, that you, Elmo, testified before Congress once.
Yes.
Was that scary for you?
No, because it was very important. Because Elmo was there to help put instruments back in the schools.
Yes, it was an arts program in the schools.
Yes.
Did Elmo have counsel with you at the table?
Yes, and he kept putting his hand over the mic and whispering sweet nothing to the emerald ear.
I know.
Elmo was waiting for him to say something very important, but he kept blowing in Elmo's ear.
Wow.
But we got the money.
That's the important thing. Now, we're very excited, Elmo, because your new toy is in the stores, the Tickle Me Extreme Elmo.
Well, actually, Elmo doesn't know anything about that.
Oh, really? I'm sorry. Would Elmo be distressed to see all these replicas of himself out there?
He knows nothing about that. He's just a little red monster that lives on Sesame Street.
There you go. Well, let me ask you, Kevin, Tickle Me Elmo Extreme's out. This is what, I mean, we've heard amazing things. What happens when you tickle this doll?
Well, what's really funny about it, I actually put down the voice about a year ago. And what happens is it's the next extreme, which probably some of your panelists will not particularly like.
This means it doesn't turn off ever.
Well, it does have a switch button, but you squeeze it once and it starts laughing and it literally falls down on its butt and starts
frothing at the mouth.
It literally gets itself and stands itself back up.
Really?
And then the second time you hit it, it falls down, it turns on its side. I can't believe I'm explaining this.
Is this exorcism Elmo or Grandma Elmo?
No, it's just the Faw Elmo, we call it.
Oh,
and then
God.
The third time it actually falls down, turns itself on its stomach, and starts slapping the floor. I mean, going into laughter convulsions, and then it stands back up and it says, "Please, no more."
Does it come with a little plastic version of a wooden spoon to put between its teeth while it does this? That sounds... Well, Kevin Clash and Elmo, we're delighted to have you both here because we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Shut up. Shut up. I'm going to cut your mic.
So recently, GQ Magazine talked to some of the more famous guests who've appeared on Bill O'Reilly's Fox show, The O'Reilly Factor, to tell their stories about what happened to them in the no-spin zone. We're going to ask you three questions based on their recollections of what it's like to go mano a mano with the big guy. Answer at least two of the three correctly. You'll win, for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Kevin Clash playing for?
He's playing for Amber Lieberman of Elmhurst, Illinois.
And I'd encourage you, since Elmo's with you, you could collaborate as you see fit.
Okay, hello, Amber.
All right. First question. O'Reilly gets a little cute with the taped introduction he uses for some guests. Which of these is a real example? A, Al Sharpton, who is shown talking about the tragedy of hunger in America and then shown chowing down on a Big Mac and fries. B, Susan Sarandon, who is introduced by a tape juxtaposing her making a political speech with her screaming her head off at a hockey game. Or C, the head of an environmentalist group was introduced by a clip not of him, but of the villainous EPA inspector from the movie Ghostbusters.
Okay, I would have to say B.
You're going to go with Susan Sarandon?
Yes.
Okay. Elmo agrees?
Okay.
He's amenable. You're right. Very good.
Okay.
So she didn't...
Hey, Elmo didn't pick no dumb puppeteer.
No. Elmo hangs out with the smart people. I should say, by the way, that a lot of these people told GQ that before and after the interview, whatever happened, Bill O'Reilly was actually very nice with them. But Susan Sarandon did this interview, went home, watched it on TV, and she's like, wait a minute. She's watching it. She sees herself speaking in front of some political rally. The next thing you know, she's screaming her head off. She says, yeah, there's me screaming like a madwoman and waving my fist. I'm thinking I look like a lunatic. Then I froze it, and sure enough, it's me at the Garden at a hockey game. So. Next question. Former Planned Parenthood President Gloria Felt noticed one way that she says shows O'Reilly likes to assert his power over his guests. Was it A, even though O'Reilly is 6'5" tall, his guests' chairs are still always lower than his? B, before the show, his producers show up with a release that absolves O'Reilly from any, quote, physical or mental injury the guest may incur on the show, unquote. Or C, in the green room, there's a large plate of tempting treats marked for Mr. O'Reilly only, and he never comes in to take one.
Take this one.
All right, go ahead, Elmo. What do you think?
Let's see. Elmo would have to say B.
You're going to go for B, and that would be that they make them sign a release form, a liability release. Do you know about liability, Elmo?
No, but I'm going to just pick B.
All right, you're going to pick B. Because you're an instinctual monster, I understand. No, in fact, it was A. He makes all the chairs shorter than his, so he can tower over them even more.
That's very scary.
Isn't it, though? He's a scary man, Elmo. Don't go near him.
Really?
Really. Now, Elmo, Kevin,
yes.
You've gotten...
Yes.
Right, well, actually, Kevin... Whoa! Don't do that. I swear it sounds like you were overlapping. All right. Now, this is what happens. Your team, we'll put it this way, the team of Kelvin and Elmo has gotten one right and one wrong. You have one left to go. Get this one right, you'll win our prize for our listener. One guest, Jacob Sullum of Reason Magazine, noted that at the end of one interview, O'Reilly said, okay, I'll give you the last word, but then proceeded to talk until the interview was done. When Sullum asked, well, what happened to the last word? O'Reilly replied, how? Did he say A, it's amazing how many people fall for that? Did he say B, I thought the pained look in your eyes was worth 1,000 words? Or C, I gotta stop saying that?
I would have to say C.
Yeah, I'm gonna say C too.
Okay. So you both agree?
Yes.
So yes.
All right. So Elmo and Kevin's choice.
It's the new Christmas toy. Mess with the host, Elmo.
It really is. You picked C. Oh, my gosh. You picked C. The answer is C. Congratulations. You got it right.
Yeah, baby.
Very well.
Yeah, baby.
Elmo, you did well. Carl, how did Kevin and Elmo do on our quiz?
Kevin and Elmo had 2 correct answers, Peter, so they win for Amber Lieberman.
Congratulations. Well done to both of you. Kevin Clash is a master puppeteer and author of the new book, My Life as a Furry Red Monster. Elmo, of course, is a furry red monster who lives on Sesame Street.
Thank you.
Thank you both for joining us, Kevin and Elmo. Ladies
Bye,
and gentlemen.
Everybody.
Bye-bye, Elmo. Bye-bye, Kevin.
This is the song, la-la-la-la, Elmo's song.